morning. Some of you may not realize how hard it is to do this, but even Yarlene was a little nervous she was going to have enough strength to pull it off by herself today. It's quite a challenge to be the band leader, to play the keyboards, and to be the only vocalist for the worship service. So, you can go now. Exodus chapter 20. If you don't have a Bible, like one, yeah, sorry. Appears in the back, raise your hand. He'll bring one right to you. You can follow along. And also, I said this last week. One of the most rewarding things I think that we've done in a while is to start the scripture reading volunteer thing. And it really makes me feel wanting to preach every week. So if you would like to participate in that, you can just tell us on the back of your communication card today and put that in the offering, and we'll contact you and work you in. Well, last week we spent the entire sermon introducing the Ten Commandments. We reviewed several reasons why God gave the Ten Commandments. And today we're going to get right into commandment number one. You shall have no other gods before me. When you read the first commandment and then you read the second one, they seem like there's a lot of overlap, almost like they're the same commandment. Well, next week we're going to talk about the second one. You shall not make for yourselves an idol or any likeness of what is in heaven above or the earth beneath the water under the earth. So we'll define that in its uniqueness next week. But the first command is simply saying you must worship the only true God. Now, while that might seem like a simple enough statement, maybe a lot of explanation required, it's actually a statement that has, important implications and a lot of depth to its meaning. In business transactions and in media transactions, there are what are called these days exclusivity clauses. Maybe you've heard of them. An exclusivity clause simply means that in light of a legal agreement, there can be no competing relationship, no competing loyalties, no competing contractual obligations. An exclusivity clause is binding. And what it says is nothing is allowed to intrude on this agreement from the outside. Well, what God calls for in the first of these Ten Commandments is simply that. It's an exclusivity clause. I'll give it a moment to pass. I hope they're all right, whoever it is. So the first of these Ten Commandments is basically God's exclusivity clause. And the question is, who is going to be the God of your life? Put it another way, God is saying, I don't want to compete in your life. And at the heart of this commandment is a call to recognize the uniqueness of God as God in your life and in my life. He says, you shall have no other gods before me. So I want to break this commandment down. And I'm going to look at that first phrase there, before me. That phrase, before me, has a number of concepts tied to it. Let's look at that. First of all, to have no other gods before me speaks of priority. No one has priority in front of me, before me, ahead of me. I am in first place. Imagine the feeling you get when someone cuts in front of you. Don't you hate it? People cut in line in front of you. I went to CVS this week. I waited 3 minutes for a parking spot. Had my signal line. It was the last spot. It was an end spot. And there was somebody coming out. So I sat there and waited. And as the car was backing out, obviously I had to wait for him to clear in order for me to pull in. But as he was backing out, another car comes from this direction, puts his nose into, so he's now nose to nose with the car that's coming out, and pulls it in and backs up right in front of me. So you know he saw me. And it was an aggressive move, It was an impressive in its aggression. But he glided into that space, didn't even tap the brakes. Something like that happens, you want to get out and ask him, hey, you blind? Didn't you see me there? And unless there's a satisfactory reason, you can get irritated. Some of you may be tempted to pull out your shank. I don't know. But God doesn't like being cut in front of either. And in this first commandment, he says, no one cuts in front of me. And it's a statement of priority, first place. The Hebrew phrase, before me, can also be rendered a second way. Before me may also mean in my presence, around me. And so he's not only saying, I don't want any other God to be before me. He's also saying, I don't want any other gods in my space. Anybody ever have somebody intrude in your space? That's annoying too. It's living in a time of COVID, and it doesn't matter what store you go to. Now that on the floor, they always have these markers, 6 feet. It's a line that you have to stand on to make sure that everybody stays 6 feet apart. Have you ever been standing on your line dutifully? Somebody's 6 feet in front of you, and the person behind you is breathing down your neck. Oh, that happened to me too. I have the worst luck, I guess. But they're violating your space. You know, you want to say, hey, dude, this is my spot. Your spot's back there. God says, I don't want any other gods occupying my space. I must be the first priority, and I must be the foremost presence in your life. And so, folks, the question this morning is this. I mean, I'm sure all of you would say, well, I don't have any other gods. I don't worship any other gods. Okay, but before we make any sort of, you know, definitive declarations here, let's define terms. A god is anything that you look to as a resource in your life. It's anything that you count on, bank on, put your trust in for your ultimate well-being. For instance, a lot of people today, they want to know about, it was a very popular day, the thing about the power of crystals. And I've been surprised by how many Christians have even asked me several times lately about this thing. What about crystals? What's God got to say about crystals? You know, and the thing is that it's just another one of Satan's lies that he uses to seduce the American culture, particularly, folks, our kids. This is a very popular thing among our youth. Well, I mean, not our youth, but the youth of today. There's crystals for headaches, crystals for money, crystals for dating, crystals for depression. There is a crystal for everything in your life. Crystals for halitosis, bad breath, you know. The Bible says that anything that you grasp, anything that you hold on to, and that you trust in to make your life work, that is a god. Another thing, as we break this commandment down, is that the concern that God has in this commandment is important for you to understand. I want you to know that God is not threatened by these other things. That's not why he says there shall be no other gods. His deity isn't threatened by these things. God is God. He's going to be God no matter what. The concern that he has in this commandment is that there are not to be no other things that you make into a god. That you should have no other person, place, or thing in your life that you treat as God, as the ultimate authority in your life. Nothing. Nothing that you give to it, God's status, God's nature, God's credibility. So it's exclusive. Again, another aspect of this verse is it means that you can't have me as your God on Sunday and then have something else as your God on Monday. Too many Christians have a pantheon of other gods in their life. And God looks at our lives and says, you know, I might be the chief God, I might be the main God in your life, but I am not the only God. And this first commandment is, thou shalt have no other gods in front of me, beside me, around me, or in my space. And by the way, if you want to know where God's space is, everywhere is God's space. In fact, the New Testament puts it this way. It says, you have been bought with a price, you are not your own. So all your space belongs to God. Another aspect of this verse, I want you to notice the order as it falls in the Ten Commandments. This is the first commandment. A guy one day hit an infield home run. He ran around the diamond, around first, second, third, goes all the way into home. The catcher catches the ball, but it's too late. The guy's already crossed the plate. He couldn't tag him. But the catcher looks over at the first baseman, and he just nonchalantly takes the ball and throws it over the first. The first baseman catches the ball, steps on the bag, umpire yells, you're out. I said, what do you mean? I just hit a home run. I just crossed home plate. He said, no, you ran around the diamond. But when you went around first, you didn't touch the bag. You stepped on all the other bases, but you missed first base. And the point here is that if you miss first base, folks, it doesn't matter how many other bases you touch. All the other bases are negatively affected because you missed the first one. The first commandment is, thou shalt have no other gods. And if you miss this one, it will negatively affect all the other ones down the line. And so the point is, you cannot have multiple gods. Because the very definition of God, I mean, just inherent in the term, is that he is, if he's God, he is your everything. One of the reasons that we have other gods, it's not because we deny the true God. Many times the reason we don't have we have other gods is it's not because we deny the true God, it's because we don't deny the false gods in our life. We're just like the Greeks, the philosophers in the book of Acts. You know, Paul went to visit with them on the Acropolis. And, you know, they had a god for everything under the sun. And then they made an image, and that image stood for them as the unknown god. Paul comes to them and he says, you know, I want to talk to you about this unknown god. The God whom you know or whom you do not know makes all these other gods that you have here absolutely irrelevant. And so the question that we must ask as a part of God's redeemed community is, are there any other gods in your life? Is there anything being related to as God, created or treated like God, anything in your life that distracts you from God? Because if there is, it violates the first commandment. God plus nothing is everything. God plus anything is nothing. Do you look to anything else in your life as a source for you to have well-being, as a source for you to have peace, to deal with your anxiety? Is there anything else you look to as your source for self-esteem? Because lots of people, they look to God and tarot cards. They look to God and to horoscopes. And they do that because they're looking for something else to give them comfort and direction about their future. But you know what? One of King Saul's greatest sins in the Old Testament was when he went and he contacted the dead so that he could find direction because he was facing danger in life. Other Christians, they seek favor from God as long as it doesn't interfere with the favor that they seek from their parents. They seek favor from God as long as it doesn't interfere with the favor that they seek from their friends. Some of us trust God, but just in case he doesn't do it right, we know we can rely on American Express. And the moment that you add any other God into the equation, you have added another God before me. Mark chapter 12, verse 30, God demands exclusive worship. He says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. And the key word in that verse is the word all. Anytime you give all of yourself to something, that means that you're not going to have anything left over for anything else. And so God is instituting here an exclusivity clause. He says, I delivered you. I delivered you when you couldn't deliver yourself. I delivered you, I saved you. And verse in Exodus 15:11 says, there is no God but me. Deuteronomy 6:5, it says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might, just like it said in the New Testament. And on it goes. Isaiah 44:6-8. Isaiah 40, verse 18. All these scriptures, one after another, they say, no one else but me, because everything else is a false god. Yeah, you're a church. You have religion. You praise with the praise band. You serve in the ministry. But you have too many gods in your life. Parents, you ever tell your children what to do? You give them guidelines. You give them directives. Somewhere along the line, they want to introduce to the conversation, well, but you know, this is what my friend does. He's like, you know, I don't understand why I have to, you know, Amelia doesn't have to do that. Alex doesn't have to do that. And they bring up their friends in the conversation as though those views were relevant to the discussion. Well, first of all, I mean, honey, let's go through this. First of all, they're not part of this family, right? That's number one. Number two, they aren't bearing any of the resources or financial responsibility for the lifestyle you currently enjoy. In other words, your friends are neither your provider nor your sustainer. So why would you think that that has any bearing in this conversation? That's what we tell our kids as parents. You know, God says, look, I don't want you to bring into my house, into my family, a value system of other gods. No foreign value systems. And even if that other God, I mean, listen, even if that other God is you, you say, well, Pastor, I don't think of myself as another God. Well, you have to understand, when you disagree with God, you just made yourself a God. When kids start calling the shots in the home, or when the kids are the determining factor for every decision in the home, including spiritual priorities, your home has just turned into Kitty City, and the kids become the parents. And God is saying, I am the parent. I set the agenda. Another thing Christians do is they compartmentalize. It's another way of having God. Have one God on Sunday, another God on Monday. I mean, why does he call them gods in the first place? In his word, he expresses it over and over. There is no God but one. Okay, well, but if that's true, why are you calling them gods? He calls them gods because of their influence on our lives. The gods are to us and the gods are for us, but he doesn't recognize them as gods. And these gods come in all shapes and sizes. They are very pleasant. They bring great pleasure to our lives. And so we have people gods, those relationships that come into our lives that dominate our existence. You know what we have? We have entertainment gods. Various American idols that capture our affection and our attention. And they overrule God's plan for our lives. They overrule God's values, the time that we give, the energy and the effort that we give to God. I mean, think about this. The entertainment gods. We live in the entertainment capital of the world. During this time of the year, you know, you're going to find basketball arenas overflowing with people who are going to go to NBA playoff games. Folks, that's a three-hour commitment. 3 hours. Sometimes, you know, if you're sitting at home watching, there's two games a night, assuming there's no overtime. That's 6 hours. In case you didn't know it, every basketball game in the NBA, they play for 48 minutes of actual basketball. They're sitting there. You're sitting there watching for 3 hours. They're playing 48 minutes tops. The rest of the time is timeouts, commercials, halftime, commentary. You know, but if you suck all of that out and just reduce it to its, you know, actual play time, 48 minutes. Now, that's just one game. In a four-game series, that's 192 minutes of which you will commit 12 hours of your life. For one playoff series. And people who attend the games, they go. It takes them 2 hours to get there, an hour to get back, 3 hours for the game. You know, 6 hours for one 48-minute experience. And not only that, there are people, even though they watch the game that night, the next day they read all the articles and they watch all the highlights of the game that they just watched the night before. In other words, if you're going to go into entertainment. I mean, just look at this issue of basketball this time of the year because it can dominate. It can govern discussion. It can govern your interaction and your availability in other places. I mean, one time I was on a plane and the captain on the plane, you know, we were taking off from LAX. He got on, the first thing he said, you know, I know that all you guys want to know what the Lakers score is, and he gave the score over the intercom. I mean, it's everywhere. You know, you can't escape it. And don't get me started on Major League Baseball because, you know, it's even more. But the entertainment has the power to dominate us, and we don't even know it. I mean, my point is that entertainment can become a god. You say, wait a minute. When does entertainment become a god? Well, when you choose between worshiping God and being entertained. When you choose between praying and binging Netflix. When you choose to spend the early mornings of your, the early hours of your morning checking your texts, scrolling through the social media, rather than spending that time in personal devotion. I mean, folks, you know, one of the first things that people do when they open their eyes in the morning is they reach for their phone.
And they start scrolling. And before anybody gets too upset, because, you know, I know we've got people who work in the entertainment business. I know that we have major Laker fans, Dodger fans, and Rams fans here. Let me just tell you, there's nothing wrong with any of those things in and of themselves. But when they compete for priority in your life, it violates the other God but me commandment. And so what happens? What happens when we break this command and we have other priorities? Well, the true God, when he competes with other gods, the Bible says, becomes jealous. Let me tell you how jealous. Judges chapter 2, verses 11 through 15. Judges 2, 11 through 15 says this: Then the sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they forsook the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt, and followed other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them, and bowed themselves down to them. Now watch this. Thus they provoked the Lord to anger. They forsook the Lord, served Baal, Ashtaroth. The anger of the Lord burned against them, and he gave them into the hand of his plunderers, who plundered them. He sold them into the hands of their enemies around them, so that they could no longer stand before their enemies. And wherever they went, the hand of the Lord was against them for evil, as the Lord had spoken and the Lord had sworn to them, so that they were severely distressed. What happens when you bring other gods into the Lord's space? He is against you. He is not working with you. He is in opposition to you. And so if money is your God, he's going to make sure that things keep breaking down so that you have to keep spending your money. He will allow money to make you miserable. You may have a lot of money saved up in the bank, but even if you have the money, he's never going to let you be satisfied with what you have, because he's going to make sure that you're always going to want more, because you have competed and made money another God. Ecclesiastes chapter 5. It is the goodness of God that gives us the ability to have labor, jobs, and create wealth, it says. In Deuteronomy 8, it says, when you get into the good land and you finally build houses, you know, you're living in the suburbs, you got a 3-car garage now. He says, after I've given you the capacity to gain wealth, and after life has gotten better, do not forget your God. But what happens is that we get the blessings, and we begin to worship the blessings rather than the blessor. Why trust God when you can pay cash? Why trust God when you can use Visa or MasterCard? Well, I tell you why. It's 18% interest. That's why. Technology can be a god. Folks, we are living in the most technologically, medically, scientifically advanced nation in the history of mankind. Think of it. There's never been another civilization in history that has the technological advancement that we have. And yet, with all the advancement, we are still brought to our knees by the flu. We ran into something technology couldn't save us from. And so while there are a lot of things that we could learn and that we should learn from the COVID pandemic, one of them should be that even the greatest nation in the world, it doesn't matter what we've created, what we've produced, what we've manufactured, we are not in control. We are brought down by the flu. And our trust and dependence should not be in science and technology, but in the God of the universe. Now, once the pandemic hit in 2020, everyone started Googling prayer. I mean, internet searches for prayer rose higher than any other word that exists. In 2020, the word prayer was Googled and searched more times in that year than it had ever been Googled in the history of the internet. And do you know why? Because people recognized that was the only deliverance they had. We couldn't fix it. And so the point is simple today. There can be no competing loyalties for God in your life. No other gods. So the question I have for us today is, do we have any other gods? Is there anything else that I'm looking for to provide meaning and sustenance in my life? Anything that I'm looking for my well-being? They say, well, what do you mean, Pastor? Do you mean that I can't look to my parents or to my mate or to my extended family? No, that's fine. Look to them. Absolutely look to them. But don't make them your God. In other words, they should never be the final authority in your decision. That role belongs exclusively to God. Now, if you're looking around, you say, well, you know, I don't know. I think I'm doing pretty good. I can't really find any gods in my life. Well, how about pull out a mirror? Because it could be that you're doing good things in life. You're praying, going to church, you're helping your neighbor. But the issue is, are you in any way asking God to compete with other priorities? And let me just offer this as a final thought. God will at times allow in your life things that other gods have no answers for. Things that other gods cannot fix. He allows that. And the reason why he allows that is because he wants us, you, me, the world, he wants us to come and to see him as your one and only hope. He says, you shall have no other gods before me. So if you're here this morning and you've never accepted Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, if you've never given him first place in your life, as we always do, we invite you to place all of your trust in him today. Perry and I always make ourselves available. We can answer any question, give guidance where it's needed, assist you in any way we can. And so if you're ready to make that decision, we invite you to come and to do that today. But just now, I'd like to ask the rest of us, let's all stand and join our voices together in this commitment chorus. And as the band leads us, no matter how familiar these words may be, folks, let each word that you say and let each line that you sing be filled with sincerity and truth.